AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's how we own it.
We're trying to figure out, well, we've now already talked about some of your early stuff. And I think people need to do some research, because what often happens in our community is that people say, well, he's already, you know, he's a Congress person. He don't understand. He don't get it. But understanding where you come from, knowing that you at one point lived in public housing, understanding your journey through the Bronx, becoming a principal, bringing people like my son into your school, which I didn't know about. So this is new information for me as well. And now going to Washington, it would seem that's the story we're trying to really replicate in our communities over and over again. And now what we're trying to figure out, since you're there, we celebrated you. Now we need to go to the fact that we mad at all of y'all, because ain't nothing happening. So tell us, why is there so much, some people want to say stalling. I'm at the point where I don't even know the appropriate word to describe how frustrated I am about the lack of action in Washington on policing, you know, now voting rights, and just so many other things. So why don't you just kind of, you talk, we'll listen.
Yeah, so the short answer is Republicans don't want to do anything at all. And then we have a few Democrats who behave like Republicans. And you've heard the names Manchin and Sinema. And the way the Senate works, and because we have such a thin majority, if Manchin and Sinema aren't on board, even through a reconciliation process where all we need is 50 votes, then we can't move anything. Like that's the short answer. The longer answer is the filibuster. So the filibuster was put into place several decades ago, pretty much designed to stop civil rights legislation from moving forward and to acquiesce to Southern Democrats who lived in racist KKK-driven communities. And so any civil rights legislation we try to move forward, the filibuster, which means we need a supermajority, 60 votes in the Senate to pass legislation, is still in place. Because of that, you know, voting rights, S1 and S4, common sense gun reform, immigration policy, all of those policies that have already passed the House. And that's the thing, like it's not all of Washington. It's like the House passed these bills already. Now it gets to the Senate, and each senator, especially with a thin majority, is almost like a president. They could thumb up or thumb down a bill and the bill would not go anywhere. So that's the short answer. The longer answer, and what you and I have talked about offline, Tamika, is we as a community, I don't think, are doing enough to really build coalition and use the coalition to engage Congress and the White House and to build power in Congress and the White House. And I'm saying that because, and we talked about this, there are other groups and other lobbies in Washington, the Fraternal Order of Police, fossil fuel industry, pharmaceutical industry, et cetera, they'll make a couple calls and literally we'll be voting on a bill on Tuesday that we didn't know about on a Monday because people made some calls. Or they'll get a bill pulled that we was like, yo, I thought we was gonna vote on this. And they're like, nah, we decided not to put that forward. They'll get it pulled on the same day as well. So the consistent engagement of members of Congress underneath or around a Black agenda, if you will, or agenda to uplift poor people and everything we're fighting for is what's needed both in the short term and the long term. So it's very frustrating. Now, good news is this reconciliation package that we're working on right now, it seems like we're making forward progress in a way that's gonna really benefit the entire country, but particularly communities of color and Black communities, investments in affordable housing, public housing, housing vouchers, universal childcare, Medicare, Medicaid expansion, 3K programs. So this bill has a lot in it, and the American Rescue Plan also had a lot in it as well with investments in public education. But in terms of overall, you know, Congress isn't responsive to like our demands or agenda, if you will, because I think we need to do a better job of organizing around it, building coalitions underneath that agenda, and then using it to wield power in Congress through the CBC and other means as well.
Is it frustrating for you being a congressman who got elected and on the right things, to do the right things, and watching, you know, being involved in a situation like we see right now, just seeing how it's just not everything you're trying to do and all the things you want to do, just seeing it being stalled and you know, prolonged?
So yes, it is. And it's like deflating as well. Like, so a couple weeks ago, while Black Haitians were being harnessed at the border with horse reins, the George Floyd Justice and Policing Act was dying in the Senate without ceremony. Like, it didn't even get that much coverage.
Right.
And for those two, as a Black man, for those two things to happen at the same time, and you know, we brought attention to what was going on with the Haitians at the border, which was good, but it still just felt like, damn, when it comes to our stuff, it dies without ceremony. But again, you know, other issues, like I'll give you an example. We just went through our first appropriations process, which is how the federal government spends its money, both here and abroad. And I had to fight, and still fighting, to move $2 million, let's say, from the Bureau of Prisons to historically Black colleges, minority serving institutions, and Black small businesses. Like, I'm still fighting to move $2 million of like a $76 billion budget to these areas. $2 million ain't nothing on a national level. It's nothing. But because of the way the structure of white supremacy and European settler colonialism is entrenched in Congress, that's just how we do business. Same thing with trying to send more money to the Caribbean. Like, we fund countries very well, you know, in Europe, in the Middle East, and other places. But like the Caribbean and the continent of Africa, when you compare the money that goes there versus other areas, it's clear to see that, like, you know, no one really has fought for or organized around in Congress for the stuff that matters most to our community. So
yeah, I mean, look at how much
frustrating
money.
But it's also like, I see it as an opportunity to do things differently. And like, it gives me a reason to go to work every day, like to put pressure on people on the inside and do enough work on the outside to make sure that begins to change. And it is changing. I mean, we just brought the vice president to the Bronx a few days ago. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why that happens is because we engage them in consistent conversations around the issues that we're talking about. And we was like, yo, you gotta come to the Bronx and see it, blah, blah, blah. And that happened. But there's obviously more work to do.
Ladies and gentlemen,
we are coming back to Atlanta. Right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.